Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome to the AmeriChicks show, Molly and Kim. I'm Molly Vogt.
And I am Kim Munson.
And we're excited to be here with you today on this beautiful Monday. And follow us, always, of course, on your radio on 1690 AM, KDMT Denver Money Talk Radio. But also, you can always listen live as well on our website, AmeriChicks.com. And all of our shows are saved, so you can go back and listen, say, oh, I missed the World War II guy, which, you know, is, of course, is every Friday, guy or gal. And so you can go back, listen to those shows, and listen to really anything. You know that we are sleuths for truth. We are searching for the truth in the cloud of lies that media and bureaucrats, politicians, political elite try to blow our way. So we invite experts in different areas to come on and really help us dig and get to the heart of the matter on issues that matter to people today.
And we dissect these issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And the goal is to educate, inspire, and engage. We realize people may not totally agree with us on everything, and that's just fine. Our goal is to have thinking conversations.
Absolutely. And when we say right versus wrong instead of right versus left, just a quick one on that. You know, I don't think we can really look at a political party as one versus the other anymore. It's the individuals inside and then the issues that they back at the time. And we don't really care about the politics. We care about, are you doing what you said you were going to do? And are you sticking to the job that we, the Americans, hired you for? And that's limited government, little bitty government, big, big individual.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. So that's it. So real quick, we'll talk a little bit about some current events in the nation. And then in the second segment, we will bring on Colonel Brett Barkey. He's a local here. He is the DA. He's a DA right now
out on the Western Slope
in Northwest Colorado. Mm-hmm. He served 25 years in active and reserve Marine Corps, 3 tours in Iraq, and he's running for state treasurer. He actually did work for the U.S. Treasury Department. So it's interesting to kind of get his take on I want to get a behind the scenes on the U.S. Treasury. Before we get to that, Kimmy, real quick, I just wanted to say a lot of people have lost out on a lot of money and opportunities when Hillary Clinton lost the presidency.
Yes, most interesting. That's going to be a great show for tomorrow, isn't it?
Tomorrow we are going to get big into the EPA and the changes with the EPA. It looks like a lot of money was going from the federal government to the scientists that they wanted to rate themselves and pretty much say whatever the government wanted them to say scientifically. So we will get into that tomorrow. But another thing just to add right now, one person that lost is John Podesta. And his family, actually. So that would be two people.
And who was John Podesta?
So John Podesta was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. Oh. And as you know, we have investigator Robert Mueller, right? He's investigating President Trump and his campaign manager, Manafort, to see, was there any Russian collusion during the investigation? And the interesting thing enough is that when he started investigating into Trump's connections with Russia, he actually found Clinton's connections
and
to Russia.
And they're pretty close.
And they're very, very close. So that is a big deal to keep our eyes on. And we'll talk more about that again tomorrow, too. But it's interesting that John Podesta's family has been hit by that. His brother, actually, is a lobbyist, Tony Podesta, and he's being investigated right now.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But then also, I would say that John Podesta has been hurt and Russia has been hurt because
they
were betting on the cash coming into their biofuel green energy companies. And one of the major investors in there was Russia.
It was a Kremlin-owned venture capital firm. It was called Rusnano.
Yeah.
And they had invested in this company called Juul Unlimited, which was a secretive green energy company. And it looks like it had been a big bet because they had hired Democratic insider John Podesta to be on the board. But guess what? There were two other board members with ties to Moscow. Ruben Vardanyan, who Putin appointed to a Russian Economic Modernization Council, and Anatoly Shubey, a close personal friend of former President Bill Clinton and an economic advisor to former Russian President Boris Yeltsin. Sounds to me, it looks kind of like Russia and the Clintons knew each other pretty well.
Pretty darn well. And after we just, you know, last week it came out with more proof about, you know, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was obviously on that board when they decided to sell 20% of United States uranium to Russia. And so that is going, we're going to get more and more and more into that soon. We're hoping to get Peter Schweizer back on. He wrote the book Clinton's Cash. If you haven't read that yet, read it, because he kind of shows you how to follow the trail of money of where the Clinton Foundation money was coming from, and then whose favors were going to be, who was going to be owed favors by what they thought was going to be the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton. But now that she's not, they're out of some money.
Yeah. I think that their bet on green energy was that that green would be going into their pockets.
Yes. Well, and it also was going to be that they were going to be able to get in and talk to many of our scientists, and then they could start to steal some of our technologies,
honestly,
and our information.
Honestly,
you know,
Molly.
I mean, in the race for innovation, do it yourself or steal it from somebody else. And it seems like we're the only country saying, here are our secrets. Check ours out.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore, baby.
And it will be good to be talking with Brett Barkey, because he worked with the U.S. Treasury regarding the Office of Foreign Investments. So I think this is, I know that the minute you saw that, it's like, I'm all over that.
Yep. I want to know how the sausage, you know, we're finding out how the sausage is made, and it's worse and worse and worse than ever could have been imagined. So, but it's good to know the truth, right? We want to know the truth.
It's very important. So,
let's get to what's on your radar. What's new in the Doug Coe school race,
Kim?
Oh
my gosh, Molly, you're not going to believe it. You know, there's this big Douglas County School Board race. And the Elevate slate of Randy Mills, Ryan Abrish, Deb Scheffel, and Grant Nelson, they are really up against a Goliath. And we had even more of a confirmation of that this last weekend. But if you can't remember their first names of Randy, Ryan, Deborah, and Grant, one of our friends, Stu, came up with a great idea on names. And just remember the acronym NAMES. So N is for Nelson, A is for Abrish, M is for Mills, E is for Elevate, and S is for Scheffel. But as we found out last week, there have been two different contributions to support the opposing slate from the American Federation of Teachers back in Washington, D.C. Total amount that we know of for sure right now is $600,000. So we've got this D.C. union that's trying to control the education of our children in Douglas County. And so that's one of the big questions, Molly, in this particular election, is do we want to have our school district controlled by a Washington, D.C. union, or do we want to maintain local control? But Molly, something very interesting happened on Saturday. A group of us were getting together to walk, you know, to go out and talk to our neighbors about the Elevate slate of Randy Mills, Ryan Abrish, Deborah Scheffel, and Grant Nelson. And so we were going to meet at my house, and then somebody said, you know, we probably want to have a place where everybody can park. So I said, well, let's just meet down at the Lone Tree Hub. It has a big parking lot, and that's the former Lone Tree Library. So we're there, and I drove up, and a woman was parked next to me, and I rolled down my window. I said, are you here to get your window painted for Elevate? And she said, no. I'm like, okay. Then we started to see cars arrive, and several of them had the names of the opposing slate on their back windows. So we're like, huh, and they were all going into the building. We're thinking, it looks like the opposition might be meeting here. So a woman came up to me, and she said, I'm here for the meeting. And I said, which meeting? And she said, the one for the ACLU that is going to be canvassing for the Doug Coe School Board.
Wow.
So the ACLU is right there as well. So we've got the teachers union back in Washington, D.C. And I should have taken a picture of the lady with the ACLU t-shirt on. And I don't know why, Molly, because, you know, typically I'm pretty bold and I do that kind of stuff. But for some reason, I didn't. But I probably should have. But I think that this is very important that people realize that this is a big fight against the big Goliath that has been messing with our kids and our education for years. So if you are in Douglas County, vote names. And that would be Grant Nelson, Ryan Abrish, Randy Mills for the Elevate slate, and Deborah Scheffel. And, you know, if you are so inclined, go to their website and make a contribution, because they don't have $600,000 that's being thrown at their campaign. And if you live outside of Douglas County, come and volunteer to make phone calls for them, to walk for them. And for just the price of a cup of coffee, give them each $5. It would really help them. And that is Elevate Douglas County.
Great. Check it out. Two more things on my radar before we go to break. President of the United States Trump is honoring today Vietnam vet retired Army Captain Gary Mike Rose with the Medal of Honor. They have been trying to get him a Medal of Honor for 40 years. Finally, President Trump is doing that.
What
for
a
his
story.
Service as a medic in the Special Forces in Vietnam, behind enemy lines, using one hand to get guys and put them over his shoulder to get them out of there because they were hurt, and the other hand to shoot. That's awesome.
And then he was injured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was given the Distinguished Service Cross, but they've been trying to get him finally the Medal of Honor, and they finally did. And apparently he's kept quiet about his mission all this time because it was super secret.
You know, and Molly, this goes into this kneeling thing that's going on in America. I hope that people understand the reason why we stand for the flag and we sing the national anthem at these sporting events is in honor of guys like this.
Yeah.
That stood up to tyranny, stood up to evil, and were willing to put everything on the line.
Literally.
Literally. And that is why we stand for the national anthem in America.
Yeah. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we are going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Colonel Brett Barkey, who is a district attorney right here in Northwest Colorado, but he has served in the Marine Corps, did 3 tours in Iraq. He is running for treasurer. And he's joining a long list, so let's see what's on his mind.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516. Or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
It's time. October is here, and the scary features are hitting the screen. Please join the historic 88 Drive-In Theater and be sure to bring someone to hold on to for their upcoming triple features. Admission at 88 Drive-In Theater is only $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. Your admission includes all features. Stay for one or all three. New fall box office hours are 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday. To stay up to date on movie showings and times, go to 88drivein.net and like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks with Molly and Kim. I'm Molly.
And I'm Kim.
And real quick, wanted to give you an update on the movies at the 88 Drive-In. And you can always go, of course, to the historicdrivein.net. And you can do that on their Facebook page or their website as well. But that's the Drive-In Movie Theater. It's the longest standing here in Colorado.
Or via our website, too.
Susan Koshevar owns it. It's on our website as well. But right now, their movies are Blade Runner 2049, Flatliners, and American Made. And then starting next week, there are going to be new scary movies. So check it out, 88drivein.net. So back to the AmeriChicks show. So, you know, there are a lot of people who are running for state treasurer. And so we're kind of excited to be able to invite Colonel Brett Barkey on to talk with us. He is running for state treasurer, but he's unique in the sense that he actually spent 8 years in the U.S. Treasury Department. So at the federal level, he actually has been dealing with the Treasury. And he knows what's going on with the money. So that's good. So we're going to ask him about that. But not yet. First, Colonel Brett Barkey, you spent you had 25 years in active and reserve Marine Corps, and you had three tours in Iraq. You retired as a colonel. During your time in Iraq, you had mentioned there's something on your bio on your website. I noticed it says that in your second tour, you were in a truck that was hit by an RPG that did not detonate. Would you mind, please, describing that for us? I cannot even imagine the fear and the stress that you deal with every single day when you are serving overseas and you have no idea when you might be attacked.
Well, first, let me say, Kim and Ma, it's so great to be with you and to get to share this. And I was a staff officer, so I didn't get outside the wire as much as the young Marines and soldiers who are were out on patrol every single day and really day in, day out, face the terror that you talked about. But I did get outside the wire as often as I could. And one of the trips I was on, I was escorting a number of prisoners from Fallujah to Baghdad, to the Abu Ghraib detention facility. And while we were coming back, I was in the back of a 7-ton truck, and it's got a 1-inch armor plate on the side, but it's otherwise open on the top. And it's late at night, 1 or 2 a.m., and I'm looking over the top of the truck, the edge of the armor plating with my night vision goggles and scanning with my rifle, and as were the two other Marines in the back of the truck with me. And just more surprised than anything, I see a brilliant flash, a streaming bright object coming, screaming right to where I was standing in the truck. And it struck, and I fell back into the truck, and I waited. And if you talk to combat veterans, they talk about the pink mist that you might see if your body is vaporizing in a massive explosion, or I was waiting for machine gun fire, the start of an ambush, or other explosions. And I waited seemingly forever, and nothing happened. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw the rocket propelled grenade ricochet off of the side of the truck, and I realized it hadn't detonated. And so as the Marines in the truck with me thought I'd been hit, and we were checking each other to make sure we're all okay, and then had the realization that nothing had happened, that we, by the grace of God, had been saved. And I served at that time with the 5th Marine Regimental Combat Team, and our regiment that year had 100 young Americans killed in action and about 300 wounded severely enough that they had to go home. And that's, you know, those folks, and as a legacy to the ones that didn't come home from Afghanistan or Iraq, is why I've been committed, reinforced my lifetime commitment to public service. But it's what I intend to do the rest of my life, to make sense of why I was spared and why so many other no less worthy young Americans didn't come home. That's what that event means to me, and it's a critical part of why I am in public service and will spend the rest of my life in public service.
You know, Colonel Barkey, this is Kim here, and Molly and I had the great honor of going to Normandy in 2016 with a team from the Denver Police Activities League that accompanied 4 D-Day vets. And what you're saying is, we've heard this a lot, is there's kind of this, why me? And when we were certainly at the Normandy Cemetery, you could look at our vets' eyes, and they're just, you could see that they were thinking about what had happened at Omaha, you know, 70 some years earlier. And, you know, and I think everybody kind of deals with it in a different way.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I've had the honor of being in Normandy as well. I was there in 2013 for the anniversary, the 69th anniversary of the landing, and met Canadian D-Day vets and American D-Day vets, and there were actually some German D-Day vets in the area as well. And a more moving place I don't think I've been to in my life. Obviously, Arlington is incredibly moving, and the ceremonies there. But this was, given the history in that location specifically, it was just incredibly moving. And those, I think, survivor's guilt is a huge part of what challenges young soldiers, Marines, airmen, and sailors coming back from conflict when they've been around folks that have been wounded or killed, their buddies. And it's a big part of what folks coming back have to grapple with, process, understand, and I don't have any doubt that it contributes to the significant level of suicides among America, you know, the young vets coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. So it is a significant issue. It's one that, like you said, I think quite appropriately, everybody addresses in their own way. And for me, the way to address it was just to recommit myself to public service and wanting to be of service in everything I do. And I've been blessed to have found a career. My mom says I don't really have a clear career path, but I think
Mom.
When I say, well, wait a minute, Mom, I would argue it's the perfect set of skills and experiences that would make me a great state treasurer. And that's what I would argue at this point.
And we want to get to the Treasury Department. We'll get to the state. First, we'll talk about the federal. But just real quick, Colonel Barkey, I want to say thank you again for your service. And, you know, as I get pulled over by the police for speeding or whatever I did, and it wasn't me, actually. I was in a friend's car last weekend, okay. And she got pulled over for speeding. Okay. Kim knows this. Uh-huh. But, you know, I think about the police have to be so nervous every single time that they walk up to the door. They have no idea what's waiting for them in that car. And, you know, and I think about you serving in Iraq and all of your brethren. You have absolutely no idea what is going to be the day that an RPG rocket propelled grenade actually does hit your 7-ton truck and actually does do some damage. You have absolutely no idea. And yet you get up courageously and you sacrifice and you risk for people in America every day. So just once again, I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And again, when I was there in 2007, we were mostly riding around in Humvees, and when an IED struck, one never knew which crew position would take the brunt of the explosion. And so, again, I extend my sincere gratitude and appreciation for the young Marines who did that day in and day out through all the years of those conflicts. And yet, they come back, they decompress, but they get ready, they strap it on, and they go out for that next patrol. And so those are the real true heroes in my view.
Yep. Well, check him out, brettbarkey.com. He is candidate for state treasurer. And so, Brett, you have kind of some unique experience because you've actually served 8 years in the U.S. Treasury Department. Tell us what it's like. What is it like in the U.S. state or the U.S. Treasury Department?
Well, you know, I was a strange hire for them, to be frank. I had an undergraduate economics degree from the University of Denver and had been a deputy district attorney, and then had spent 10 years on active duty in the Marine Corps, where I'd been a litigator, a policymaker, and so forth. And they looked at me and saw my litigation experience. They wanted somebody in the office, in this particular office, that understood and was not afraid of the courtroom. They wanted somebody that had a broad understanding of economics. I was also working on a Master of Law degree at Georgetown at the time that was focusing on international trade and national security, and they were intrigued by that combination of interests and skills, and so they gave me a chance. And so I went to work there, and not really knowing what to expect when I walk in, you know, having spent 10 years in and around the Department of Defense, and, you know, the sense of urgency and mission and focus that you see in the Defense Department. And what hit me immediately when I went to the Treasury Department was that same sense of urgency, the same sense of focus and importance, and what happened in the United States Treasury Department mattered, and the policies that we were making and the issues that we were addressing really mattered to America. And that I found just really exciting about getting to be there. And the part of the Treasury Department I worked at was called the Office of Foreign Assets Control, and that's the part of the Department of the Treasury that exercises economic sanctions. And there are about 20-some programs of various kinds, running from North Korea to terrorism, and I had both of those portfolios at one point in time. And just that we were implementing serious economic and foreign policy and national security decisions of the President of the United States to carry out our nation's interest in the economic sphere, and that I thought was very, very complementary to what I'd been doing in the Defense Department as a Marine. And so I felt very blessed to have landed that job. I served as a bridgehead of sorts for I managed to be, you know, help get a couple other Marines and a soldier hired, and was very proud that we introduced the Defense Department former Marines and soldiers to. And I'm sorry, I'm parked outside my favorite bookstore. somebody hit the car alarm. So
anyway, there goes your car.
So, yeah, well, and I've been on the lookout for leaf blowers, and I haven't seen any of those around. Sadly, someone will walk along. But so, anyway, I was proud to help get another a couple of vets and former Marines, former soldiers hired on at the department, and I think we made a significant contribution and brought a different perspective, you know, to the more economically kind of background, business background folks that were also in the department.
So, Colonel Barkey, what years were you at the U.S. Treasury Department?
So I was there from 1999 to 2007, and part of those years I was mobilized and deployed, but over that 8 years I served in the Office of Chief Counsel for Foreign Assets Control, and then ultimately my client agency, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, hired me to be their assistant director for enforcement. So I was responsible for all the enforcement actions, and we had both civil and criminal enforcement authorities. Our jurisdiction, that agency's jurisdiction, is over the entire United States economy. It looks out over every U.S. company and every individual in America, and our regulations touch everything. And so it was a great perspective, a great vantage point to be on watch over what happens in our economy, the international economy as it affects ours. And so I think it was a tremendous experience to bring to the state treasurer's office, where the main function of that official is to safeguard the state's funds that run through the Department of Treasury for Colorado. And just beyond, you know, to have that kind of broad economic background and experience and be on watch and be on the lookout for threats, certainly on the lookout for opportunities for investment. But the main thing is making sure our assets are in institutions that are sound, that are protected against fiscal influences that might be coming along, or trade influence. I think those are that's what I would bring to the state treasurer's office. Mm-hmm.
Well, Colonel Brett Barkey, running for state treasurer.
Dude, I need help. How can I perfect my golf swing and keep my promise to put in a whole new kitchen by next month?
No worries. Call Rafe and Colin at Harmony Ridge Construction. They've been doing this for 40 years all over the globe. Trust me, they'll make you look like a genius, and you'll have more time to perfect that golf swing. You really need to work on that.
Great. I'll give Harmony Ridge Construction a call today. What's their number?
720-660-0265. Or visit them online at harmonyridgeconstruction.com. They're best for any small fix or large remodel. They'll help you out.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
Are you concerned, perplexed about the events happening in America today? Where can you go for answers? Check out the Centennial Institute at Colorado Christian University. The Centennial Institute sponsors research, events, and publications so that you can understand the most important issues facing our state and nation. By proclaiming truth, they foster faith, family, and freedom, teach citizenship, and renew the spirit of 1776. Check out their website at ccu.edu to read their latest publications and find a schedule of upcoming events. That's ccu.edu.
Hey, welcome back with the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we're at Denver's Money Talk Radio. We want to talk about how to save your money, and the guy on the phone with us right now, Colonel Brett Barkey, is actually running for state treasurer, and he has come up with a very interesting solution to protect Colorado taxpayers and actually save para at the same time. And that will mean that, you know, our public employees, like teachers, firefighters, troopers, all these guys actually will be able to keep some of their retirement funds because their money has not been, watched over well.
Yeah.
So, but before we get to that, we're talking about Brett Barkey's background because he has a very unique background to become state treasurer. He actually spent 8 years in the U.S. Treasury Department. And I find it interesting, Brett Barkey, that the group that you were in was the Office of Foreign Assets Control. And that's the group that administers and enforces economic and trade sanctions against targeted foreign countries, regimes, terrorists, you know, drug traffickers, all those guys. And right now that sanctions is in the news, right? We see, you know, what we're doing, trying to stop North Korea from developing weapons of mass destruction and Iran, you know, we were trying to stop them as well, but then we ended up giving them a lot of money. So Brett Barkey, do you mind share something with us that's helpful, that would be a good story from your time and in stopping the flow of funds to such terrorists?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. And so the day that is most memorable for many Americans is September 11th. And I just, the day changed my life forever. But the September 12th did as well, and it did because I had intended to huddle with my family and absorb what happened on the day before, and got a call early that morning from the deputy director of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, indicating that I needed to come in immediately and be part of a briefing to the White House counsel and the legal advisor to the National Security Council. And the reason for that is because I had been working in the area of interdicting funds to terrorists, and was asked then when I came in to brief those folks on what the United States Department of the Treasury's response was going to be to that attack. And President Bush had directed that the whole government, the whole of government, come up with a response to these attacks. And so I was tasked to figure out what the United States Treasury Department was going to do. And what I briefed was a comprehensive set of economic sanctions against terrorism. On September 12th, we didn't know for sure that it was Osama bin Laden, but that was where the money was in terms of the best bets. And as the intel came in, that became clearer and clearer. So the way that's done, both now and at that time, is by a presidential executive order. And normally that takes months and months to vet with the State Department, the Defense Department. Every head of federal agency has to sign off, every lawyer in those departments, and there are a lot of lawyers in the federal government. So all those folks have to sign off. But we were able to get that done, and I had finished a draft by the night of the 12th, and we got it signed by President Bush on September 23rd. And that was Executive Order 13224 that interdicted the flow of any material support or funds to terrorists. And President Bush called it the first shot fired in the global war on terrorism. Now,
that's pretty impressive, Colonel Barkey. Well, that's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. And one could often say that economic sanctions when you're in a gunfight are very symbolic, but it's been part of every American conflict, really going back to the original Tea Party was an economic action.
That's true. Throwing the tea in the Boston Harbor.
Exactly. Hit them where it hurts, in the wallet.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And every act, you know, we do not want our enemies to have access to our vast economy. We do not want wayward American citizens providing resources to terrorists. So we do that in a number of areas. But this is a very comprehensive set of sanctions, and I was proud to have been part of it. But it felt still, I was a reserve Marine officer at the time, still felt very, very symbolic. And so after getting it up and running and getting it implemented, I volunteered to come back on active duty. And that's when I served shortly after that, the first of my three tours in Iraq.
That makes me want to ask the question about the Iran nuclear deal, but we don't really have time to do that one right now because we want to talk about Colorado. And you had a piece that was in the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel on October 22nd, yesterday, regarding a four-step plan to save para. Now, that's a pretty important PARA, which is the Public Employees Retirement Association, is a pretty big deal here in Colorado. It has a pretty big unfunded liability. The taxpayer ultimately is on the hook. I think we've been kicking this can down the road. We've been using some maybe unrealistic rates of return on the assumptions. So why don't we jump into this? This was a very interesting piece that you had in the Daily Sentinel yesterday.
Well, yes, and thanks for that opportunity. And I very much appreciate the folks out in the Sentinel being willing to address this issue head on. And the way I would describe it is this way. I describe my approach as a ham and cheese sandwich. And I think we need to move our retirement system to that more kind of modest meal from the steak and lobster system that we have now. And I love food. That's why I'm using this analogy. So, and I would love to have steak and lobster every night, but I can't afford it. And my point in this piece is that the main debate that we need to have in Colorado is what kind of retirement system for our dedicated public servants can we afford? And I think we have to recognize that most American industries have moved away from the steak and lobster model. It's largely a legacy model. The defined benefit kind of plan most industries don't have because it's just way too expensive. The risks are too great. The uncertainties are too great. But that's the plan we have now. So let me describe my ham and cheese sandwich. So the top slice of bread are the present retirees. And I believe both legally and morally, we need to leave those folks untouched. Their benefits would remain unchanged. The bottom slice of bread are all new retirees. So that snowplow driver or state trooper or young teacher that's just going to be hired tomorrow after this system is revised is going to go to a strict 401k type of retirement along with Social Security. And I would recognize that is a diminished benefit. It's not steak and lobster anymore. It's a very, very much different. But that is where American industry is now. And frankly, that's where most Coloradans are that we're asking to pay for these pension systems. And they're looking at their own pension system and say, hey, I got ham and cheese. Why am I paying for someone else's steak and lobster? Mm-hmm. So there's definitely an issue about fairness that needs to be part of the discussions. But anyway, let's go back to that sandwich, the all-important sandwich. So the slice of cheese, I would call the folks that are over 50 in the system. And the way the system works for most of the five divisions, if you're at or around 50 years old, you begin to become eligible, depending on which system you're in, for early retirement. And so those kind of benefits are also strongly protected in the courts. And I think the benefit structure, which is 2.5% of pay times your highest, and I would change the system to make the highest career average times your years of service, is going to be the benefit, but you're going to pay more for it. You're going to pay, the employee is going to pay 11%, the employer is going to pay 22%, and we're going to move it to that highest career average instead of the high three or high five, which has been the subject of a lot of gamesmanship. So that's the slice of cheese, but the big chunk of meat, the biggest bulk of folks that are in the system are under the age of 50. And those folks are going to move to what's called a cash account system, where the employee is going to kick in 8%, the employer is going to kick in 8%, and then we, the taxpayer, the system, is going to guarantee a 4% return. And then whatever that pot of money looks like, whatever that dollar amount is on the day that person retires, is going to be transformed by a private vendor into an annuity. And that does some really important things. One is that transfers what's called longevity risk, meaning if I live longer than anybody expects me to, that transfers that risk entirely onto the employee. Right now, PARA, us as taxpayers, bear that liability, and that's part of why the liability has ballooned so much in the last couple of years, because PARA was a little slow in realizing what others had recognized maybe a little before, that folks are living longer than they had planned. And so that's one of the big concerns. The other, you mentioned these sort of fantastical assumptions on return rates. In the past, PARA had assumed an 8% return on their investments, and that looked great for a while, and their historic rates of return have been around that level, but that was during a great equity boom in America that most economists don't think is going to happen again in the future. And most more conservative economists, and I mean small c, not big C, conservative versus liberal, I mean small c in terms of prudence in investment and management, small C conservative economists are going to tell you you're not going to get more than 2 or 3 points beyond 30-year Treasury bonds, which are at around 2.8%. So you're looking at 5% max on returns. And every point you miss that return, you add 15% to the unfunded liability status. So
wow.
That's why I guarantee it 4%.
Colonel Barkey, hold that thought. Can you hang through the break with us? We'd like to continue to talk about this through the end of the show.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great.
Brett Barkey is running for state treasurer. Check out brettbarkey.com. We'll be right back.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516. Or visit her online at karen-levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com. Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We have Colonel Brett Barkey, who is running for Colorado State Treasurer, on the line with us. We're talking about PARA. But before we get to that, Molly, we need to talk a little bit about Evan, your IT guy. .com. Evan is a network of IT professionals. They're ready to provide on-demand help with any of your computer needs. And so check them out at evanyouritguy.com. And right now they're still offering those great little webcam covers for your computer so that you can cover up that camera so that nobody can be spying on you.
But then you can also open it up when you want to do like Skype or something like that anytime, and it doesn't leave that sticky that you have when you use tape, which is what I used to do before evanyouritguy.com gave me my free camera.
That's right. And you know what I really love about them is we love entrepreneurs here at AmeriChicks, and they are just perfect for small businesses because small businesses don't have the capital to go out and have an IT specialist on staff. And so all you have to do is be with evanyouritguy.com, and you just pay for the help that you need. And I just love that for them. So we love entrepreneurs. We love evanyouritguy.com. So be sure and check them out.
Yep. We also love veterans, and evanyouritguy.com is hiring veterans. So if you know a veteran with IT skills, hook them up, evanyouritguy.com.
You got it.
All right. So let's get back to Colonel Brett Barkey. He is running for state treasurer here in Colorado. Check out his website, brettbarkey.com. Right now, we are talking about he has a four-step plan to save PARA and at the same time protect the taxpayers. His article came out in the Grand Junction Sentinel yesterday, and actually you can see it. It's on his website, brettbarkey.com, so go there to look for that. So let's get back to Colonel Barkey. Let's continue the conversation about PARA. I think before we went to break, where were we?
We were talking about rate of return,
yes.
I think.
And with how they were assuming a large rate of return. And in your idea is we're going to kind of make that a little bit more realistic. And in the cash accounts, assume something more like a 4% return. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And so there are two main risks you talk about in this kind of pension planning. One is the longevity risk that we already mentioned, where folks live longer than you expect. And so who bears the risk of living longer? And the second one is called investment risk, and that's where, you know, your assumed rate of return doesn't pan out. And that's been the main source of PERA's problem, of those two risks together have not been managed very well. And so my proposal shifts that longevity risk onto the employee, the way it is in most other retirement systems. And the investment risk is capped at that 4%, which is a much, much more realistic level that we think that I think is better to make to plan these kinds of systems. So when we cap it at 4%, say we have a great year and we have excess, and that helps return the fund to a fully funded status. It will pay for COLAs and that kind of thing. But if we miss it, we shouldn't miss it by very much, and the risk is greatly reduced. So in essence, what that does is it shares that investment risk between the employer and the employee, and the employer in this case obviously are the Colorado taxpayers. It caps that risk at 4%, which I think is a much better protection for all taxpayers.
Okay, Colonel Barkey, it's Kim here, and I'd like to go back to the cheese sandwich and talk a little bit about the cheese. You said that these are the people that are over 50, and right. I've been working very diligently on this school board race down in Douglas County, and one of the things that people don't realize is the high cost of the taxpayer, what they have to pay for PERA. You mentioned it's 22%. And for the school district to put in, and 11% for the employee or the teacher or the employee. You mentioned, right, as we go back down to the bottom piece of bread, the new hires, that they're going to be in a strict 401k with Social Security. And Social Security is less expensive. It's about 6.5% for the employee, and 6.5% or 6.75% for the employer. Now, if we can move towards that and move away from this 33% over here, that seems like there's going to be more money available that we could pay our teachers and employees more down here as we start to move into a more realistic retirement system.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I was week before last at the Colorado Association of School Boards meeting where the executive director of PERA was presenting his system, and the gasp in the crowd at right now, the employee investment for teachers is 8%, and the school district's percentage is 20%. And so what PERA proposes to do is increase that from 8 to 11 for the employee and from 20 to 22
Gee-many.
For the employer.
This is hurting these young teachers. My gosh.
Well, exactly. And so, and moreover, kind of in the small print of the change, they're recommending calculating it based on gross pay, not the net pay the way it is now. So
that's a double whammy.
Yeah, exactly. And so that impact is going to be huge on school districts, really on all local government and other participants in the PERA system. And, you know, you can't understate that. And so what I heard in the crowd from school board members is, well, that means we're either, we might have been looking at raises for our teachers or raising starting pay for teachers next year, but we sure as heck can't do that now. And, maybe we need to cut some programs. And I heard one school board member from Akron, Colorado, say the hit for their rural school district is on the tune of $17 million.
Oh, my
that
Lord.
Just a huge chunk of money for rural, smaller school districts in particular that already don't have a lot of budget room. And it's huge for the state government. You know, one of the bigger divisions in PERA are all state employees, and, you know, like your troopers and CDOT folks and all that. So it's pressure on the state budget, which is already being squeezed by the Medicare expansion and Amendment 23 and requirements to fund school districts. And so my plan, I think, will add some more flexibility. It'll give us a chance to pay teachers more, give us a chance to give teachers raises. I don't think those professions get enough for what they do and are so critical to America and our American culture to be able to have wonderful folks that can spend a career in that kind of profession. The other thing that I heard in that environment was, hey, most 22-year-olds or 24-year-olds coming out of college that want to be a teacher, really aren't thinking about retirement. And this PARA system is sort of a legacy system, and it's mandated. You know, they don't have any choice about that 8% coming out of their pay. I guess I would suggest if you ask them that they would rather have that as take-home pay. Oh, by the way, in a high cost of living area, they need that take-home pay to be able to afford housing in these in our present high cost of housing environment. So most of those folks also are going to change jobs 7 or 8 times. So the PARA system was started in 1931. It was built on the idea, as a lot of industries did at that time, that somebody's going to stay at their job 30 to 40 years and then retire. But that's not the way our workforce is now. And that's in this kind of this legacy system that we have isn't really capturing the needs of new employees coming into state and local government that might be part of it. And so my proposal would increase its portability, make it more relevant, and make it more affordable for both the school district, the employee, and the taxpayer at the end of the day.
Okay, Colonel Barkey, this portability, I think, is a very important issue for our young teachers, for our young people, because, as you mentioned, they don't stay typically at a job for 30 years. And so currently, if a young teacher is, when do they get vested? And if they leave before they're vested, then do they just lose that money that they have put into PARA, or how does that work?
No. And so 5 years is the period for vesting in PARA. And so if a young teacher teaches only a couple years and then wants to withdraw his or her money, they can do that plus interest that's been earned on it, capped at 3%. If they stay over 5 and up to the point of their eligibility for early retirement, if I recall correctly, they can withdraw their funds plus 50% of the employer contribution.
I see.
And then, right, and then if they're of retirement age, they have some portability options that allow them to withdraw all their funds and all the employer contribution as well. So it's not, their portability is reasonable, I think, right now. I think that could be improved. Mm-hmm. It needs to be improved to reflect the change in the circumstances. We want to recognize that this was a benefit package intending to encourage folks to stay in their jobs. And so, but you got to balance that against the way our workforce is now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Balance with reality.
So Colonel Brett Barkey, right. We are just about out of time. We've got just a couple of minutes. We really appreciate you joining us this afternoon on the AmeriChicks. And I really am fascinated with your solution to PARA. I think that is really, really interesting. So final thoughts, how can people get more information about you? And what is the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, again, thank you so much. It's been so great to be with you and get to talk about it. This is such an important issue for taxpayers, I think, in resolving this huge unfunded liability, anywhere between $32.2 billion to $50 billion, according to PARA, much, much more, according to other analysts. And so I want to be part of that solution. That's the kind of state treasurer I would be. I want to offer solutions. I'm not wedded to any particular ideology. I want us just to solve problems as Coloradans. And I think I bring a unique set of experiences in economics and a leadership experience both at the Department of the Treasury and in the military and as a district attorney. So I think I bring the right set of qualifications to the state treasurer's job, and I'd be so excited to have the support of all your listeners in that endeavor.
And where can they get information about you?
So, yes, ma'am. So brettbarkey.com, BrettBarkey.com is the best way to reach us. There's a way to leave some feedback, certainly a great way to leave donations. I always welcome in a statewide race. As a public servant all my life, I can't stroke a big check to myself to run this race, so I definitely need the help of everybody that's willing to support the only veteran on the Republican side and the only one that's got federal-level experience in a Treasury Department.
Okay. Well, Colonel Brett Barkey, thank you so much. And I think we need to have you back to talk about Iran and North Korea as well. So we'll see if we can get on your schedule.
I'd love to do that.
Okay. Thanks
so
much.
Thank you, Colonel.
Bye-bye.
Well, Molly, that was fascinating.
Really, really was. Well, you know, we just had Joshua Scharf on last week talking about PARA and trying to come up with solutions. We've had Walker Stapleton on. We've had a lot of people talk about PARA over the past, six months or so. I'm telling you, I'd never heard of Brett Markey before, but I think his solution's the best one I've heard yet.
Well, it's pretty fascinating. So we are going to end with a Ronald Reagan quote, because so many people are stepping up these days. He says, "Let us be sure that those who come after will say of us in our time, that in our time we did everything that could be done. We finished the race. We kept them free. We kept the faith."
Amen to that. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, signing off. We'll see you tomorrow, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m.